Good day, all. Good evening. Good afternoon. Good night, perhaps. You're listening to the George Washington Podcast. I'm just going to start up right here at the top. Let you all know that we got a great show today. Remember to like, comment, subscribe, do all those things that you do with podcasts. We've got first Jordan F, fan favorite, talking about sports, got all the sports in a North American context that you need to know about, NHL, NBA, some Leafs, as is the trend or the custom here in Toronto. And then also, after that, I talked to my great friend, Ricardo P., also known as Dick P., Richard P., Big P. No one calls him that, but that's cool. And we just talk about a lot of stuff that kind of triggers him, unfortunately. But it's good. It's good. Good talk. He was having his lunch while we had it. Before we get to the show, I just want to, while I have the time to myself, I wanted to shout out Steve Albini, or is it Albini? Albini, like in the book, Our Band Could Save Your Life. It's one of my favorite anecdotes where to get around paying his phone bill, he just used different iterations of his name, Albini. So Albono, Albini, etc. He was, if you don't know Steve Albini, he was a producer. He liked to think of himself as an engineer, because he tried, his whole style was to not have production, to just capture the live sound of the band. He had a lot of great bands himself. Love, Big Black was okay. Shellac was more of my thing. I embarrassed myself when I told my friends, then girlfriend, that I loved the music of Rape Man. She just thought that was really weird. But it makes sense. I don't even want to get into it. We won't get into Steve Albini controversies today. We don't talk ill of the dead here on the George Washington Podcast. George Washington, if you're nasty. No, if you're a cool person. He also produced, I think he produced a Breeders album. He helped produce Pixies' first album. He also produced In Utero by a little band called Nirvana. Yeah, he was a prolific and one of my favorite producers, to be quite honest with you. But I've already spoken far too much. Let's get to the show. Hello.
How are ya?
I'm pretty good. I'm energized, ready to go. Talk about some sports, or as the Europeans call it, sport.
Sport, yes.
Indeed. Jordan F, everyone, by the way, in case you didn't know.
Yeah.
You done know now.
If you done know.
Yeah. If you didn't know, you done know now. Okay. So we got some sports. Let's start with the main events right now. NBA, we'll get to that a little later. It's kind of a flop at the moment, but I think there might be, it might swing back and forth a little bit more than we might expect, but let's start with the East. Let's start with the Rangers. Mm-hmm. Rangers up 2-1 against those wily Pumas.
Those pesky Panthers.
Pesky Panthers. At it again, the Wildcats.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people thought Florida was going to just walk all over the Rangers, but, you know, the Rangers got that overtime victory on Friday, and they really saved the series, because I think if Florida went up 2-0 going to Florida, that would have, you know, been really bad for the Rangers, but they were able to tie the series in overtime, and they kept that momentum going into game 3. A day game in the playoffs, something we're not too used to, but the Rangers played a lot of day games during the regular season. They were a hot matinee team, is what they like to call them, during the regular season. So maybe they were more prepared for it than the Panthers. They got out to a 4-2 lead. Panthers did come back and tie it, but again, the Rangers winning in overtime on a questionable goal. Both goals, kind of questionable goals with goal interference, almost was going to look like there was going to be like some sort of challenge there. But anyways, at the end of the day, both goals stand, and the Rangers are now up 2-1, and I think they're in the driver's seat. I really do. I still think the Panthers are in it and have a chance to win, but it's weird because the Panthers have just been so dominant in this playoffs, and so have the Rangers, really, but it's going to be interesting to see how the Panthers respond now, you know, being down in a series. And it's also going to be interesting to see if New York, you know, could keep their, you know, foot on the pedal, full throttle going into this, or if they ease up a little bit and let, you know, the Panthers climb back in the series. That's kind of what they did with Carolina. So that's really the best series, in my opinion, right now. I know there's only two series, but like that, it's pretty entertaining.
Well, I mean, I always like on just a sports fan level. I always at this point, I always include the NHL and NBA together. So I think cumulatively, I think it would be fair to say of the four series going on, this is the best.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. What
my prediction? Yeah. If you want a prediction, I think the Rangers are going to get it done in 7. Which personally, before the series, I thought Florida would win, but just after watching the Rangers play these last two games, I really think that they have the edge over Florida now.
So, what do you think is the edge? What is that edge? Can you quantify it?
You know, I think the Rangers are just getting goals from unlikely sources. Like, they got a guy in Barkley Goodrow who already has matched his goal total that he had for the regular season. You know, they got, you know, players stepping up. They got great goaltending. A lot of people thought that Florida was, you know, in the driver's seat when it came to the goaltending, but it looks like the Rangers' goaltending is, you know, just as good or even better than Florida's right now. So the edge is a fine line. You know, it's they're both really close teams, but I just think that the Rangers are getting more from their depth right now. And, you know, they're shutting down Florida's top guys a bit better. And the series is, it just seems like, you know, when the Rangers are winning, you know, you could tell they're playing a certain style of hockey, like you've been seeing in the first, like, you know, like I said, they won their first 7 playoff games. And it's looking like that again, like they're playing that type of hockey in the second half of game two and going into game three.
Yeah, they successfully managed to keep playing their style because it seems like they've made the calculation that to try and match the Florida style would just, it's a losing prospect. So it's better to keep doing what they've been doing to win these games.
Yeah, and, you know, Florida, everyone, you know, pegged them as this really tough team, gritty team, and, you know, they're built to win the playoffs. But the Rangers are tough too, man, and they got some tough customers. And yeah, they're it's very even, but I just think the Rangers have an edge right now. And like I said, it's a very slight edge, but I think they have it.
Well, it could always change from game to game. Do you believe?
You're right.
Do you believe in what's the word? Momentum. Do you believe in Mo?
For sure, I believe in momentum in the playoffs, 100%. Like, you know, like I said, the Rangers, they won that game in overtime, and they brought that momentum in to start game three here. They played great off the jump. They got out to a 4, you know, I think it was 4-1 at one point. Florida came all the way back, but they were still able to, you know, win in overtime. So with that momentum going into game three, you know, they were playing a bit more aggressive and all that. Without that momentum, who knows? Maybe they don't jump out to that type of lead. And yeah, it's at this point, though, it's like the teams are so evenly matched, and it's so slim, like every category, that like I think momentum is actually playing a huge part in it.
Yeah.
And the fact that they got the split in Florida and came back 1-1, you know, winning in overtime. They got the split in Florida and were able to make it 1-1 in Florida, you know what I mean? Like, when it could have easily been 2-0, right? Like, that overtime win, you know, I know it's only game two, but for you to be 1-1 or down 0-2 heading home is huge.
Yeah. Before we move on to Edmonton and Dallas, I just gotta say, like, because in an earlier podcast I was lamenting how the Leafs were in unfair division setup and all that, but looking at these games, it does seem like these are the four teams that should be playing in a conference final.
Yeah. Like I said, I think I alluded to this too early in an earlier podcast. Dallas, a lot of people don't, you know, a lot of people forget that they've been to a conference final and a Stanley Cup final, like, all within the last 4 years. Like, they've been there, done that. They're looking to move on and finally win a Stanley Cup. I actually missed the game the other night, but I saw Dallas 1-3-1.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the Oilers, they got a big win in Dallas game one. I watched that game, went to double overtime.
Yeah.
McDavid and Draisaitl played great. You know, McDavid had a great chance to end it in the first overtime, got robbed. And then it went to the second overtime where they finally ended it and beat Dallas 3-2. And I think if you're Dallas, you want to make sure you're playing with a lead and, you know, you're in the driver's seat a lot, because like you saw, you know, in game one, Edmonton goes out to a 2-0, they go up 2-0 and then Dallas comes back.
Right.
But you're going in overtime. You know, in overtime, the benches are short. You know, you're going to see McDavid every other shift. And you want to avoid situations like that, right? Yeah. When you're playing players like McDavid. And Edmonton thrives in situations like that in the playoffs right now, right? Because they have guys like McDavid and Draisaitl. You know, Dallas has great players too, but I think if you're Dallas, and I didn't watch last game, but I saw they won 3-1, and it seemed like we're in the driver's seat the whole time. And that's how Dallas has to play if they want to beat this Edmonton Oilers team. So can they do it in a best-of-seven series? Well, we'll find out. I still think that Edmonton is going to win. But, you know, 1-1 going back to Edmonton, you can't be you can't be upset if you're an Oilers fan.
Yeah, that first game, though, a lot of people said, like, that was not that great a game for the Stars, but what I saw of it, like, they looked, for a game where they were apparently not that good, they looked pretty structurally good. Like, it was not as bad a game as people were saying. So if that's their bad game, then Dallas is has a fighting chance.
For sure. And you look at that game, like, yeah, people said that they didn't play a good game, but they still took the Oilers to overtime, not playing well. And you look who scored both their goals, Tyler Seguin, a guy who used to be one of their star players, had a lot of injury trouble in his career, and now he's more of like a second, third line guy. Not saying he's washed. He's still a very good player, but he's not really the Dallas star anymore. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Like, they got young guns like Joe, like Wyatt Johnson, and they got Joe Pavelski now. They still have Jamie Benn and, you know, all these other players now, all these other young guys on their team. But hey, Sagan got it done for them, and they didn't win, but, you know, like that's how deep they are. You know what I mean? To have a guy like Tyler Sagan on the third line.
Yeah, and the other thing is just, like, during that overtime, like, one thing that struck out at me, just, like, a random moment, is just when Kane got the puck, and, he just so easily... I mean, obviously, McDavid, Draisaitl as well, like, other guys on the team, but, like, the way that the Oilers can just so easily get zone entries, like, it's, like, nothing to them. That's going to be a huge... Yeah. difficulty for the Stars to have to deal with that.
Yeah, no, the Oilers are just, they're elite, and, you know, gaining the zone and creating chances. Offense has never been a problem in Edmonton these past years. It's they've had similar problems like the Leafs, right? Like, you know, goaltending and defense, but you know, they've had guys, unlike the Leafs, they've had guys emerge on their blue line like Evan Bouchard.
Right.
Darnell Nurse and, you know, players of that caliber. And it looks like Stuart Skinner is now emerging as to be a number one goalie. But we've talked about this. Like, you don't need to have a true solidified number one goalie anymore to win a Stanley Cup. So, you know, like I said, I think it's going to go 6 or 7. I believe the Oilers will win. But if Dallas won, like, and the same with the Panthers and the Rangers. I mean, it's so hard to predict a winner in these series. Like, it's literally the best of the best in hockey.
Yeah.
And, you know, first round, of course, they're lopsided series. Is second round, you could say teams got lucky, but once you reach this stage in the playoffs, like, you're, you know, these predictions are merely like guesses, you know what I mean? Like, picking a name out of a hat.
Right. Yeah.
I would love to see Edmonton, New York in the finals. I think both those teams are going to win, but if it's Florida-Dallas or Florida-Edmonton or Dallas-New York, would it surprise me? Of course not.
Yeah, exactly. I would be happy with any... I would watch any of the possible matchups. That's what I have to say about that. Before we move on to anything else, let's go on to the talk of coaches, because coaching has been a hot topic in the Big Smoke, a.k.a. Toronto, this past week. Let's start with Berube. How do you feel about the Leafs getting Berube as their new head coach, former Dallas Stars head coach?
Yeah, Berube, I believe he won a cup in St. Louis, and he's also coached Dallas.
Did I say Dallas Stars? I meant St. Louis.
Yeah, St. Louis. Did he coach Dallas at one point?
I think it was
St. Louis.
Yeah, it was St. Louis.
Yeah. Look, listen, the team he won and coached to win a Stanley Cup in St. Louis in 2019, the way they were built was a lot different than the team that the Maple Leafs have.
Yeah.
They had one, their highest paid player, I think at the time, made $9.5 million. Was it Ryan O'Reilly, I think? Maybe 8.5? Like, they didn't have a player, like, star-studded players.
Yeah.
Like how the Leafs have. And they had a bunch of very coachable, impressionable players. And they had guys who, you know, got the job done and you know, wanted to win and like they drafted and signed as free agents and developed. If you're asking me a prediction on how the Leafs are going to do next year with this same roster and Craig Berube in and Sheldon Keefe out, I would say the exact same thing is going to happen to them. Yeah. But this is just step one in a process, right? Like, it's hard to, like, we're hearing Marner's name, we're hearing Tavares' name possibly being moved, maybe Morgan Rielly. Like, obviously they got Berube because they want to build a Berube-style team.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
And like, so, yeah. It just makes, yeah. Like, you see the last two games they played when Keith had to just give up and like play like forecheck, just dump the puck, get the puck, simple hockey, and like it actually worked. So like that's a big sign of the future.
And I think you would see more hockey games like that from a Craig Berube style coach team, even in the regular season. But the thing is, you're going to have to get those players that want to play that type of hockey. Not saying that the whole Leafs franchise is going to be overhauled, but there's going to be some movement in order for him to coach his way. You know what I mean? So where it starts, is it with a Marner trade? I don't know. I still think it's hard to trade Marner because, one, he has a no movement. And two, like, if you know, you're trading Marner, a part of trading Marner is getting cap relief, right? Yeah. But it's hard to get cap relief in today's NHL. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like if you're going to, a team that takes Marner is almost going to have to give you the exact amount of salary back. So if you're doing that, then you're obviously going to want to fill a need that you have. So, like, I don't know. I think the Marner trade, when it happens, might be a trade that Leaf fans look at and be like, what the fuck? That's what we got for Marner? You know what I mean? It might be like three players that are like, and some draft picks, like three players that, you know, who knows, maybe none of them have touched 25 goals, you know, in their career. And I think it's going to be, look, I think that Leafs Nation should really brace themselves because I think it will be underwhelming, you know, when it happens. And I think it would be one of those trades that you see the, like, you see the prospects of it, like, down the line almost.
Yeah, it kind of hurts.
Or what they could, like it might hurt just because of Marner is one of those players that he's put up superstar numbers, but like I still don't think that every team in the league values him as a superstar because he's playing in Toronto. Do you know what I mean? Exactly, and I'm not saying he's like a stat patter, but like it's just the reality. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's just, it's kind of sad to see the end of this era just because. How, like, you could play the what-if game. Like, what if you didn't just have that, like, say to these guys, you didn't have a GM, a young GM, who was like, hey, we'll just give you all the money you want.
Yeah.
We'll use all the years that we could have had you on a cheap, not cheap, but relatively cheap contract, and we'll just pay you exactly what you want so that we are hamstrung to, and we can't get other players. So, like, they've wasted the years where they should have been winning things. And now, like, that's the whole thing with the Tavares. The Tavares contract was, like, it's bad now because these are the years where you would have accepted.
Already won.
Yeah, so you should be accepting, like, this would have been fine, like, if they had already won something.
Honestly, I remember when the Leafs signed Tavares, and I'm not blaming them for signing Tavares because he wanted to come here, and he actually took less money to come here because he could have got an extra year in New York.
Yeah.
So he took $11 million less. But when I saw that cap hit of $11 million for John Tavares, who was approaching 30 already when the Leafs signed him, I never really thought they needed to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I never really thought like it was something that needed to be done. Like, I thought if they just stayed the course with their young guys, they could have been almost at the same place they are now.
Yeah.
Or maybe in a better spot. And you know what? At the end of the day, they did it. He's a hometown guy who wanted to come home. But, you know, sometimes, like, yeah, I just don't, I don't know the words to say, because it's like hard to, it sounds stupid to say like, oh, at the time, don't sign John Tavares when he wants to come here and he's actually taking less. And at the time, giving him $11 million when those other guys weren't making big bucks seemed like the right thing to do. But I just, a lot of people, you know, saw the trouble from the start, were like, you know, people knew it was going to be a rough situation for them heading into the future. But yeah, and then the Marner contract, the fact that he, you know, he signed for more than $10 million, I think.
Yeah, he wanted the same as equivalent to Matthews, which is crazy. And then also they get pissy whenever they don't play together.
Yeah.
So like he gets to pad his stats and look amazing, but you don't see him doing much. Like, this is not to discount the player. Of course he's a great player. We're talking about like inches here and percentages of greatness, right? But when you put him on a third line, when you put him on a second line, when you try to drive a line based on him, whenever he's been put down to the second line, like, he's not really showing anything. Like, we talk about how he's such this amazing playmaker, but like, where is, how come he can't create these plays for lesser players?
You know, when you, if I were the Leafs, if they can end up trading Marner, what I would do, I would get rid of Tavares' contract somehow, attach picks to it, send him to a team that, you know, could just absorb his cap.
Yeah.
Put Marner on the second line. You'd be like, listen, buddy, you're driving a line this year. You're not playing with Matthews.
Yeah.
You want to make $12 million next year because it's a contract year. You got to show us. Yeah. You got to show us. Because how are we going to know your value unless you're driving a line on your own? Last time when he got his big contract, he played that year when Tavares had like one of his career years. He was like Tavares' wingman, right? Yeah. Or something like that, where like, you know, he benefited greatly off, you know, the power play and, you know, playing on the second line when all the top defenders were going after Matthews' line.
Right.
And that's what I would like to see, is him driving the line.
Yeah.
You know, you know what? We're going to put you with Domi and, I don't know, some other random winger that we just picked up off free agency. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to see what you could do. And I think, you know what? It, like, that's how you would know his true value. And my opinion, base his next contract off. But I don't know if the Leafs really want to even offer Marner an extension at this point. So I think that's also why you're hearing all the trade talk now. Because if you go into the season and, you know, he's a pending FA, like free agent, it's, to risk losing him for nothing would be a huge failure on the organization.
Well, like he has a bunch of knocks against him. Unfortunately, it's like, one, he's like a smaller guy, so he can't really play this type of hockey that ideally you'd want to see. Two, he's an East-West player. Like, he's like the quintessential on this team, the Leafs, which we're speaking of. He's a quintessential East-West player. He's like the East-West player when they want to start playing North-South hockey. So, like, that's another problem. Like, he's the guy, when I think of a drop pass that does nothing, I think of him.
Yeah, it's I know everyone in the media is saying this about him lately, but he benefits in the regular season. He's a regular season player, and he doesn't modify his game at all or really bring you anything special when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah. And meanwhile,
Meanwhile,
Hyman is like tearing it up.
And wouldn't you have rather loved to, you know, if you could do it all over, keep Hyman
over, of course,
a guy like Marner?
And then that's
Hyman and Matthews would have been a great pair.
And that's the downside of having like a new GM, like a starting, having your GM be like, you give him his first job.
Yeah.
I'm sure that he would have had taken that back, knowing what he knows now.
Exactly. And you know what? A lot of people are, you know, kill Dubas, rightfully so, for the contract he gave him. But, like, you're right. Like, Dubas was a new GM, and how was he not going to sign Marner and Tavares? He would have looked like a failure if he didn't at the time.
Yeah.
Right? So he learned something, and, you know, unfortunately it came at a cost of, you know, not winning in the playoffs here in Toronto, but it's tough now. It's tough because now, as Bradtree living, like, you can't offer Marner less money on his next contract. Yeah. Obviously, he's only going to want more. So,
that's right.
So yeah, you kind of have to trade him. But yeah, you're right. Like, that's why when you're a team that is built to win, even if you're you've rebuilt with like a young GM and a young coach, it always ends up when you're really trying to win, you end up bringing in guys with experience because, like, they know how to put the finishing touches on things and get things done. And I think no doubt the Leafs would have been in a much better situation with a veteran GM and a veteran coach. Like, if they didn't waste all those years with Sheldon Keefe, like, if they went out and got a Barry Trotz earlier or something, you know what I mean? So, but you know what? They are where they are right now, and we'll see what Berube has in store.
And then now you brought up Mr. Keefe, Chief Keefe. We last saw him in his video thanking the fans and the media and everything. And he would look like he was in heaven, like he would had died. Like, it was like a beautiful, lake behind him. Like,
dude, it almost looked like it was pre-planned, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like, I can't wait to get fired and be like, I'm going to my fucking cottage and just fishing and basically saying, like, hey, I just got an extension, so I'm getting paid anyways.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm going to fucking have a hot coach summer.
Yeah, exactly. But it wasn't to be. Well, I guess I don't think he'll start work immediately, but I guess this job, it seems too good to pass up. He's now going to be coaching. He will be the head coach of the New Jersey Devils. And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, the Devils got a lot of good young players, like Hughes and Nico Hischier, and they have young stars on their team. And a couple of years ago, I think they made the playoffs. They had a great regular season. So, you know, the talent is there, and I think they kind of tuned out their last coach. And I think Sheldon Keefe, first off, he learned a lot from his time in Toronto, exactly, and he's obviously going to carry that with him to New Jersey. And I think it's just going to be, this always happens with, like, former Leafs, but I think it's going to be a situation where he finds a lot of success in New Jersey.
Sure. For sure.
And, like, it's crazy, but, like, it just, Toronto, I guess, like, is a market where people learn so many lessons, and it just seems like so many people fail here, and then they go on to have success other places, but, like, even Marner, I think once he gets traded, if he gets traded to a team like out west, like I don't know, the Avalanche find a way to clear some cap space and get him, or Vegas or something. Like, it's like he will learn how to win.
I think,
like, he will learn how to win somewhere else.
I think, and that, like, the perfect spot.
He'll have success, and it'll be one of those crazy Toronto stories again.
Yeah, I think the perfect spot for Marner would be Chicago, but I don't know if they'll be able to spin that trade.
Chicago would be interesting. They could definitely take the cap. It would be a situation where almost like he could be thrown in to be Bedard's winger right away.
Yeah.
And I don't think he'd win right away, but I think long term, eventually Chicago's going to get back to winning playoff rounds and all that. But I don't know if Chicago's really looking to make a type of splash like that yet.
Yeah.
But that would be interesting. I haven't heard a rumor like that, but that would be crazy interesting if he was to team up with Bedard just to see I keep hearing Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Because obviously the connection with Dubas and all that, but I feel like the Leafs would prefer to send him to the West Coast.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I feel like they will almost take a little less to send him to out west than, you know, to have some, you know, him. Or imagine he goes to New Jersey and links back up with Sheldon Keefe. Like, it's, you know, it's, I don't know. It's there's lots of possibilities out there.
So two things. Like, first thing, yeah, as you were saying with former Leaf success, I think it's like, it's like with Dragon Ball when they wear like their clothes are weighted, so once they take off the weighted clothes, they can basically fly and just like, murk people. Like, I feel like it's like that. Like, it's just the weight training of it is amazing for everybody, players, coaches, GMs. Yeah, you learn a lot. The second thing with Marner, I think a lot of it is like, we can talk about fits in organizations, but a lot of it is going to be also like the psychological aspect, because you've got that no movement clause. So you have to ask yourself, how is Marner thinking at the time? Is he thinking, fuck this, I want to be a Leaf? Is he going to take that stance? Like, I will not be moving there will be no movement, I will be here. Or will it be more of, I'm ready to go, kind of dejected, I'm sick of being here, I'm sick of this, whatnot, I want to escape? Or is it going to be like, I want to show the Leafs how much better I am, I'm going to give you my teams that I want to be traded to, and they're going to be very disadvantageous for you?
Yeah, I think a lot of that also has to do with his contract extension, right? So it'd be like, okay, he might say, fuck this, I want to be a Leaf, but the Leafs could also say, well, look, buddy, like, we don't plan on giving you a contract extension, and, you know, the way you could generate, like, this contract Marner gets, his next contract might be his biggest contract of his career. So if you're the Leafs, you're going to sell it in a way where, like, if you sign a deal with a team and they're the team that drafts you, you could add an extra year. So you get 8 years, right?
Yeah.
Instead of seven. So you ultimately get more value, like more money. So I think when the trade happens, it would be kind of like a sign in trade where he's signing his new extension,
taking a note from
getting the
NBA.
Most value. Exactly. And then while moving on to another franchise and taking that contract with him. So I think that's the way the Leafs are going to sell it, where, okay, you might want to be a Leaf, but like, the fact is you're not going to be a Leaf for a long time. So you might as well let us help you get to the next place you're going to be while signing a new contract and getting that top dollar. And we'll put you in a situation where, like, listen, like, you have no movement, so it's not like we could just dump you in, I don't know, who was the worst team in the league last year? Like, other than, like, we can't just dump you in Columbus if you don't want to.
Or the Sharks.
Like, we actually have to trade you to, like, we'll work with you to get you to a team that, like, is ready to win as well. So, I would be very surprised if Marner, you know, dug his heels into the ground and said, no, I want to be a Leaf, especially in this market. Like, there's already so many, like, rough articles written about him and stuff. Like, it would just get even worse. And Marner doesn't strike me as a mentally strong individual.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately, who knows, maybe this conversation has already happened with the two parties as well. Like, but ultimately, when like that conversation happens, like, he will agree to be like, okay, like, let's figure out a team that I could go to that I wouldn't mind going to, and is ready to offer me that extension that I want, which will probably be between $11 a year for 8 years, and let's just get it done. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's ultimately what's going to happen, and it's the smart decision for both of them.
Right. And then I can't move off this without bringing up, you brought up three trade ideas, and your third one is, like, it's actually quite a possibility, but it was heartbreaking to hear it. Morgan Riley, what's your thoughts on that?
I just think Riley, doesn't make an absurd amount of money where he has a tradable contract. And he, in Toronto, has been, like, pegged as this number one defenseman.
Yeah, but he's not.
And he doesn't get paid like a number one. He's not a number one, but he's been asked to play a number one role in Toronto, and I think that's unfair to him.
Right.
And I think he is a really good player, but the fact is he's just not a number one D-man. So the reason why I brought up Riley is just because, like I said, he has such a tradable contract. Like, how much does he make? I think he only makes like $7 million.
Yeah.
Which, like, for him, like, in this NHL, like, that's very tradable. You could get some value back for him, and you could free up some cap space to do other things. So that's the only reason why I really brought up Riley, is because his contract is so, like he's the type of guy where if the Leafs were actively looking to trade him, they could trade him no problem.
Yeah, he's 7.5 until 2930.
Yeah, and with the cap going up, that's not really much in terms of, like, to pay a number two defenseman. There are defensemen that are worse than him out there making a couple million dollars more.
Yeah.
So I think with Riley and the Leafs, it might just be, like, both of them just need a fresh start. He's been here since the Phil Kessel days, which seem like light years ago. Yeah. He's one of those originals that are still on the team, and it might be a situation where it's just like, you know what, man, thanks for everything you've done. A lot of people thought that this guy would be the next captain. You know, they gave it to John Tavares. I still think it should go to Austin Matthews.
Morgan Riley. I think he's got the captain. It's just like he's good with media. He's got that captain aura, and his wife is like a Canadian royalty. Like, it's...
No, you're right, but I just think his Leafs tenure isn't going to be much longer, so there wouldn't be a point of making him a captain. So.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying, and it's a very popular opinion.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, it's not. I'm not, like, rewriting anything. Like, I'm not blowing minds with that. Yeah, okay, so let's move on to the NBA briefly. So have you been watching any of it?
Yeah, I watched the first two games of the Celtics-Pacers series. The Celtics are up 3-0 now. That game one was super exciting. It seemed like this series was going to go back and forth and possibly to seven, but I do not know what happened to the Indiana Pacers. I don't know. Maybe they were just too excited for the Indy 500 today and forgot how to play basketball or something. But I don't know. I really had high hopes for that series. I thought, like, oh, wow, like, this is going to go to seven. Boston's finally going to be tested, because, like, this seems like Boston hasn't really been tested this whole playoffs. But and obviously, being a, you know, Siakam lover, I was really rooting for the Pacers. But game two, they got slapped. They went back to Indiana, and I thought, you know, they would put up more of a fight. They ended up losing. And yeah, honestly, I think that one's done. And no team in NBA history has come back from down 0-3. So I don't even know if I'm going to watch the rest of the series. But it looks like Boston's going to the finals again.
Yeah, but, okay, Pacers barely play defense. Like, it's just their system that they don't play defense. Like, the whole idea is, like, quick scores. And, like, which works great in the, what was it called? Which, like, I think most people have already forgotten. Mid-season tournament?
Tournament.
It worked great then, but I don't think it works well in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's also the fact that they are still a very young team, and this is really their first playoff run together.
True.
You know, the fact that they went to the conference finals is a huge step for them, but yeah, they're clearly not ready to be a finals contender team, and you see that through these past three games here, so... But like I said, I really thought after game one, I was like, wow, we're in for a 7-game series. But yeah, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And it looks like it's done.
Yeah. And then we've got our Mavs and we got the Timberwolves. Seems like it's going down the same path. I will not give you the score right now.
I'm watching it right now, yeah. But
Pretty close. Pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Minnesota might be the Indy of the West at this point, because young team. However, they do play a lot of defense. They are actually a very good defensive team, but it just seems like the lights might just be a little bit too bright for them here in Dallas. And like I said, I was, you know, really hoping for some long series here, but it's, I don't know. The NBA, these two rounds here just seem to have, like, you know, nothing really, no storylines really.
Yeah. Well,
happening, but
yeah, it seems like a transition year where we're getting the teams of old, like our mid-season champs, in-tournament champs. You ever notice that the Lakers win all the, like, fraudulent? You ever notice that the Lakers win all the fraudulent, like, championships?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they won the bubble championship and they won the in-season. It's classic Lakers,
Yeah, classic modern Lakers. We're in a transition era where we're going to start seeing these older teams, obviously, like, Golden State kind of on the downswing, like the Pretenders too. I don't know about these 76ers. I think Clippers, I don't know, like every team that Harden has ever touched is just like the man. He's a good player, but he's just like poison. Like,
yeah.
How many franchises have him and Ben Simmons, man, these guys.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode on the Clippers. I mean, there's a lot of changing of the guard in the NBA right now, and I think a lot of people in the NBA media wanted to see Minnesota win this series, just because I think Anthony Edwards fits the narrative of an NBA, like, face of the league superstar more than Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
You know, Doncic, like a European, kind of plays the game slower and kind of less athletic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like pass first type of, like, you know, Euro step. Like, it's never really been like something that the media and Americans really like grab onto.
Right.
But what I would say about this Mavs team is they got Kyrie Irving, who's been there before. And he is someone who has really, you know, done a 180 on his career from where he was last year, where people were like, oh my God, is he even going to get another contract because of like how amazing he like is able to get out of playing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? It's like, can we really trust this guy? But like, it seems like he's found a home in Dallas, and being Luka's number two is probably like, you know, when he was teamed up with KD, KD brings so much drama already on himself.
It's, yeah, exactly.
That when you know, because of the career choices he's made, that when you team that, you know, then you put him next to a guy like Kyrie, who's also kind of controversial, you get like, you know, you kind of get a shitstorm. But in Dallas, I mean, he's kind of been like, you know, in the shadows of Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
And, you know, he hasn't been relied on. Like, sorry, I shouldn't say that. Not relied on, but like, he hasn't been like,
the pressure is not on
in this. Yeah, exactly. As much as it was in New York,
like the mental pressure, and also like just like defenses don't like plan as much for him because he's not the first option, or like he's not a center of gravity for the offense, right?
Yeah, and like it runs through Luka. Exactly. You know, Kyrie is 1A, but you know, at the end of the day, Kyrie is like a huge part in winning in the playoffs, and him and KD were never able to get to these stages. Like, I find when the playoffs go longer, Kyrie just starts to shine, and he was never able to do this with KD. But now he's him and Luka are able to do it. And Luka's been to the conference finals with Jalen Brunson. They didn't get it done against Phoenix like a number of years ago.
Yeah.
So now you got a guy like Kyrie who's been there, done that, hit those big shots. You know, it's benefiting both of them. Where I found when Kyrie was teamed up with KD, it was it didn't seem like a good fit. And sometimes it's just all about the fit. And sometimes playing with your buddies isn't the way to go.
Yeah, we've been hearing a lot about, I think, the end of the player, not player empowerment, but like the end of the player-made teams, because we're just seeing how they do not really pan out at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we're really seeing the end of three or four superstars on a team, where now superstars understand, like, okay, you know, maybe two of us, but then, like, you know, we understand that, like, we need a deep bench. We need, you know, shot creators and guys who are brought on the team specifically to defend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
like,
exactly.
We can't just have like three guys making $50 million and everyone else, you know, being veteran minimum guys.
Yeah. And you also can't have guys where it's like you're duplicating your skill sets. Like it makes like Shaq and Kobe. Shaq and Kobe are not duplicated. They're completely different players, and that's the point, right? Like you can get multiple like great players on a team. But they gotta like yin and yang each other. They have to complement their skill sets. You can't just have like four scorers and then you don't know who's gonna shoot the ball at the end of the game and then you're always deferring to each other. Like that was the big problem at first with the classic, it's crazy to call it classic now, but those classic Miami teams, LeBron Miami teams.
Yeah,
especially that first year with them. Yeah, and geez, the Nets, man, that's crazy to think that like they're gonna make a like 30 for 30 or some documentary about having a team with Nash as the coach, and then KD, and then Ben Simmons, and Harden, and so crazy.
It was just you did. What I found with KD and Kyrie is the best Robin to somebody's Batman.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like KD wanted to be Robin with the Nets. And he didn't want to leave. But Kyrie was like, yo, like I brought you here to leave.
Yeah.
You know, and like I just, you know, I want to, you know, be like how what I was to LeBron and you know win a championship and like when you like it's almost like he wanted to win like KD a championship because KD will forever be criticized for what he did by joining Golden State but you know KD just didn't take those reins and you know he was injured a lot. It is the later half of his career, but you know Luka Doncic is a star and he knows he's the star of that team.
Yeah.
And Kyrie knows it too, and I think that's why it's working so well. And hopefully, you know, hopefully, like, Kyrie, you know, sticks with Dallas and ends his career, like, being Doncic's, you know, Robin and potentially winning a championship, maybe even this year. Like, it's, like, for Kyrie, like, that would be such a great story. And, you know, he's still, like, such a great player to watch. So it's just nice to have him in a situation where he's, like, winning basketball games. And yeah, like, him getting out of, you know, playing with KD, I think, was the best decision he could have made.
All right, let's leave it there. And I'm going to watch the end of this game.
Okay, we'll chat next week, maybe.
All right. See you later. Thanks, Jordan. Yeah, it was a pleasure. Hope you had a good weekend.
Take care. Yeah, you too. Take care, D-Man.
All right. See you. Jordan out.
Jordan out.
You can hear me, right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
And I can hear you.
That's good.
Richard P.
Also known as Ricardo P.
Ricardo P. Ricardo P. Okay, I won't do that again. Yeah, the man with his ear to the pulse of what's going on in the world. Would you not say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
More of the pulse of Don Mills.
The man of Don Mills. That's not bad. That's not bad.
I don't live there. I just work there.
All right. Okay. You ready?
Yeah, I'm born ready.
Okay, cool. Because this is kind of going to be a mail-it-in app. But my heart is here. I haven't done the pre-planning that I usually do, painstaking pre-planning. But I'm going to let you take it away. You've seen this story about Ticketmaster / Live Nation, DOJ.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. Finally.
Got anything to see? You want me to give some info on that, or are you ready to go?
I do work in the news industry, so there was a story that covered this, so I do have a very light understanding of what's going on.
Okay, go ahead. Inform the listeners.
The DOJ is filing a lawsuit against Live Nation and Ticketmaster for basically being a monopoly for so many years because they're in cahoots with one another in terms of controlling the venues and the ticket prices for those venues and who gets to sell those tickets at those venues. And, you know, we've all been victim to it. And, you know, when you order something on the internet off Ticketmaster and you're like, oh, okay, a $50 ticket. And then all of a sudden there's a service fee and there's another fee and some other kind of fee. And they're very vague and ambiguous. And all of a sudden you're paying more in fees than for the ticket price itself. And you feel really unsure and you feel exploited.
Indeed.
Or exploitated.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. So, yeah, I was doing some cursory reading on this. And so when Live Nation and Ticketmaster had a merger, there were conditions put on that merger. And it looks like they have been breaking all of those conditions constantly. It's just not a good system right now. The other thing that I found was that Ticketmaster was actually doing this secret scalper thing where they were selling software to scalpers and telling them to use it to get tickets instantly. So, like, that's part of their revenue stream, their plan of making money, which kind of makes sense because Ticketmaster, like, I guess what's important to them is to sell the tickets. It's more about getting every ticket sold, and they don't really care who it goes to, or, like, they say a lot of crap. This is me editorializing, by the way. They say a lot of stuff about helping the consumer and they love music fans, but really they just want to move the tickets as quickly as possible and not be left with any unsold tickets or inventory. What do you feel about that?
Makes me want to vomit. That's how it makes me feel.
Yeah, that's fair. They've also, yeah, I should also say they've been also venues cannot really use any other companies or work with any other because they will basically put tell them that they can't get any hot tickets like Taylor Swift, etc.
God.
I
hate it so much.
Yeah, you're just steaming. I can feel it.
It's revolting, everything about it, and it stinks of corruption, and I don't know, I'm kind of skeptical that the DOJ is actually going to do anything. I feel like this is kind of a performative thing, but who knows, maybe they'll actually crack down and make them pay up or break up the monopoly or something. I don't know. I have a feeling they're probably going to get some kind of fine as a slap on the wrist, but the paying that fine doesn't cost more than, you know, the amount of money and profit that they've made from doing this for so many years. So that's just the cost of doing business.
I agree with that. Any other thoughts?
We'll see. I don't know. I hope that, what's his name, Merrick Garland or whatever, the DOJ guy.
Yeah.
In the States, hopefully he actually, you know, cracks down. But
yeah, but
I'm not going to get my hopes up.
Yeah, I think it's more of, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that. It might just be, like, for the election that's coming up.
Yeah.
Kind of sad. Sad but true. But I don't like reading about it. Also, it seems like even if the monopoly was broken up, the prices of tickets wouldn't necessarily go down by that much. Maybe Two things. The price of tickets will probably not go down like at the point of sale tickets, but hopefully resale tickets will go down a bit. Like, those are crazy. Those are they're several times more than the actual sticker price of the ticket. The other thing is that the Ticketmaster computer system is terrible. And Ticketmaster themselves said that, like, oh, no other company can do such a good job as us. But they're not doing a good job at all, which is insane. So it's insane for them to say
keyword can, because other companies are locked out of selling tickets. So no wonder. No, you know, yes, it's a true statement, but
yeah,
there's a reason why
it's true by default. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't you think that, like, this is a situation where, like, any other, like, a tech company could easily do what they do much more efficiently? Like, I think, like, Google or Apple, if Apple wanted to do ticket selling, they would do a much better job.
Yeah, they would.
It's
I hate Ticketmaster.
You know what?
It ruined my day.
I'm so sorry. They should just go back to having to go to the, like, go in person, stand in a line.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's, even if you buy the tickets the most legal way, you still feel like you've been scammed at the end of the day. And, you know, I've been scammed legitimately before. You were there. Mm-hmm. We tried mm-hmm. to go to a Glass Animals concert, and mm-hmm. I bought tickets off of Instagram, but they were fake tickets. Mm. And that's the last time I bought tickets from a stranger on Instagram. I feel like an idiot.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
I don't know what happened to me. I was so mesmerized.
Those were the days when you still had hope.
Yeah. Things were simpler back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Last thing on that, like, I won't swear, but what the heck, excuse my language, is a convenience fee? Like, a convenience fee?
If they got rid of those bullshit fees,
yeah,
pardon my language,
yeah,
that would be a win.
Okay, yeah,
we'd be fine with just that.
Indeed,
just get rid of the dumb fees. You know, take your stupid cuts that you're already doing on all the embezzlement and, you know, monopolizing, but just get rid of the vague fees that we just know. Come on, like, at least, like, hide it, you know.
Okay, so moving on to another thing that is going to get you a little riled up. It's like you picked all the things that just, like, make your blood boil. TTC CEO Rick Leary. This is straight from BlogTO, is in the crosshairs of a new campaign to have him fired from the transit agency's top job. and hundreds have signed their names in support of the petition to oust the executive. That was 3 weeks ago. And then last week, after like a hydraulic spill of fluid that caused a massive shutdown of the subway, he won an award. He won an award. It's incredible. Let's see here. He got an award from the board, the TTC board, congratulating Mr. Leary for his service. Quote, Rick is the epitome of a true transit professional, and his lifelong commitment to the industry is proof of that. So how do you feel about this situation in the TTC in general these days?
The man needs to be removed at all costs, effective immediately. He's been there since 2014, so he's had a solid decade to run things into the ground. We had Andy Byford before, who was fantastic, but we lost him to New York, and that was a very sad casualty. But with Rick in there, you know, he's you can Google his name. I put Rick Leary career into Google shortly before you called. And some of the top things that come up in the search are, one, he used to work for the transit system in Boston, which he did a very poor job of doing that. So we've got failing upwards to tick off our list. And then the second thing is, he had a salary increase of about 19% between 2023 to 2024. And the salary is $539,000. So he makes over $500,000 for doing such a poor job. And then also, upper management in the TTC administration has left or quit over allegations of harassment, and apparently has an awful temper. And there's a lot of really yikes type stuff, yikes category, as people would say, that he performs in that workplace. So I think he's got to go, and it's only a matter of time till some bombshell, you know, scandal comes out, and then all the media will jump on it, and then they'll do something. But the damage is already done, and the man's already, you know, gotten the bag. You know, he's set for life. Probably made, you know, millions of dollars from being incompetent.
And not to mention that he's already probably got a pension on the way as well.
It should be revoked, and he should have his bank account frozen, since Justin Trudeau is so good at doing that. They have the power to do it. I don't see why not in this case.
That's okay. There's spicy thoughts, but let's just say you were the TTC CEO. What would you change?
Well, that's a tough question, because there's so much that needs to be changed. The first thing I would do is I would probably change this protocol that they have, where they essentially shut down an entire station or stretch of stations on the subway due to a quote-unquote medical incident or something. You know, if someone has a medical emergency on the TTC, that's awful. And get them off the train as fast as possible, and then keep the trains running. Yeah. Why are you shutting down multiple stations because someone had a seizure or something?
Yeah.
This is, you know, and I've heard that the reason why they do this is because they don't want to be liable or something. But it's like, come on, just move them down the platform or something. You can handle the person outside the station or something like that. Why do you have to shut down everything for 2 hours over that kind of stuff? And there's always this talk about these fires. You know, oh, trains are delayed due to a fire. I've never seen a single fire before, so I'm not sure, you know, and I know that's an anecdotal experience, but as someone who's been taking the TTC on a near daily basis for almost 2 decades now, I have a feeling that there's something not right about that.
Fire.
So that would be the first thing I'd change.
Yeah, that's one of the most famous TTC announcements. Fire at track level.
Yeah. Yeah, we have signal issues.
Yeah.
We've heard that one before, haven't
we? That's right.
Signal issues.
Yeah.
What, is it, what, it's a light? You have an issue with a light? Joking?
I think that, like, ultimately, the what is needed is, like, multiple east-west lines, multiple north-south lines, so that if there is a something needs to be closed, then you can divert people to another rapid transit line. Because, like, it's crazy to, like they caught, there's a problem, they close the station, and then they divert you onto a bus that, like, just, you wait in a gigantic line, which is just, like, chaos. And then the bus moves slower than people walking. And then even if you try to get, like ride sharing, then it's there's too much chaos for the car to even get to you. Like, it causes traffic, the car traffic. So you've got car traffic, people traffic, and then transit traffic. It just caused these issues cause gigantic problems for the system overall. Like, just the movement of people daily.
I completely agree. And this is a real quote from earlier this week. I saw from a spokesperson for the TTC or something. He said, "We have a well-oiled machine of shuttle buses." And he was, like, really proud, like, saying it. I was like, are you insane? Shuttle buses? They should be called shittle buses. They're fucking terrible.
And, like, first of all, well-oiled machine after the hydraulic spill thing. Like, not a good choice of words. Second of all, like, that's not a good sign that you think you're good at that. And that it's even a thing that you need to have on call constantly. Like, you shouldn't have shuttle, like, you shouldn't be experts at shuttle buses. You should just not have to use shuttle buses constantly.
No. Absolutely not. That should be a last resort emergency that happens once every 3 years. But it seems that I'm more frequently on shuttle buses than I am on the subway itself, which, by the way, is a technology that has existed for, you know, I can safely say at least 80 years now.
Yeah.
It's a train that goes through a tunnel underground, guys, you know, and there's no traffic in these tunnels. It's you literally just go one direction, and they still can't seem to figure it out. So, and I'm sure there's many people that are employed by the system that do a good job, and they want to make the TTC better. But, you know, the problem comes from the top, and it comes from incompetence. And, you know, we could just look to other projects that are also in that we are in dire need of completion. But, you know, the Eglinton LRT, it's still under construction.
Yeah, that would be nice.
You know, there's definitely some kind of embezzlement or corruption going on with that. But every company just seems to blame another company, or they don't have a comment at this time, and nothing ever happens. And it's like, why can't this whole charade be audited? You know, we need some accountability here, but, you know, that's asking too much, I guess.
Indeed. I'll try and get some more answers for you on that, and we'll get back to this. Well, we will revisit this topic because it is a topic that is always of interest to Torontonians everywhere.
Okay. Nothing's going to happen until we occupy Davisville. That's what I'm going to leave it at.
Hashtag occupy Davisville.
Yeah. Hashtag enough is enough.
Indeed. If people even use hashtags anymore, I never know. Like, most of the time I see hashtags ironically.
I think people are still using them here and there.
All right. Now let's end this off with some news and notes in the music world. I've been pretty busy. I haven't really gotten to catch up on some of the music stuff, but I got some stuff for you, and you can just let me know how you feel about it.
Okay.
All right. First thing. Apparently, there's going to be a Sufjan Stevens musical.
Oh.
Illinois, the musical. How do you feel about that? You going to go see that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd check that out.
I know you're a fan, and like, he's a pretty big indie pop star.
Is he involved in it, like the actual performances, or is he just like involved in like the creation and direction of it?
Okay. That's a great question. He did not have any direct involvement in the cast recording, but I have no idea what the point of this is. But it is going to be in it's a Broadway show, apparently.
Mm.
Yeah. It's an adaptation.
I'd be interested in learning more.
Yeah. So what is your hypothetical out of 10 before seeing it? Your on an expectation level. Do you think that would be like a what would you give it? It's based on an album that you love with an 11-piece band singing some of his greatest hits.
I'm not a huge fan of musicals. I can enjoy one here and there, but I'm not like a connoisseur by any means or anything like that. And the source material that they'd be using from that album, I could definitely see that in a theatrical type of a setup, 100%. It'd be interesting how they kind of string all that together to try to make a story on stage. That would probably be the most interesting part.
Yeah.
But I don't really know exactly what they're aiming for, you know, because I don't know anything about it. I just heard about it from you just now, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be really interesting in terms of what the vision is for this type of a event or performance. So I'd be very interested in checking it out. I've never had the opportunity to see Sufjan perform live, so I've always wanted to. But maybe this will be the closest I'll get.
Indeed. Okay, next story. Black Keys quietly cancel their entire North American arena tour. So they were going to play September across North America, but they canceled all of those except for their performance at a NASCAR race, and people are speculating that this is because the price of tickets was ridiculously high for a band that had their heyday quite a while ago now. Remember when the Black Keys were on top of the world?
Wow.
Yeah.
They were big. They were really, really big, really quick. And I have seen them live once. It was pretty mid, as the kids would say these days. I was never a huge fan, but I didn't dislike their music. They've had a couple songs I was like, all right, I can bop to this.
Yeah. I mean, it was go ahead. Actually, tell me more about your experience seeing them.
Well, it was at the ACC, and I'm not a big fan of that venue just because sound-wise, it just doesn't work for me. A lot of distortion. It's kind of all self-contained in that one large venue, and it's just there's a lot of echo, and just distortion is just flying around, bouncing back, and I'm hearing recycled sound, to put it lightly. And it was so long ago, I don't quite remember their performance in terms of details and whatnot to give a proper review, but I know Cage the Elephant opened for them. It was all right. It wasn't a great concert. The tickets were like, you know, pretty far back or whatever, but that's what you usually do at those kind of things. And,
So
it was mid.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of, no offense, but they are kind of a mid band. I think what people liked is that it was simplicity. Like, it's two guys, just like some rock. Like clean sound, I guess, like garage rock, basic sound that you can bop to. Indeed. Two things though about that concert you were saying. First of all, it's called Scotiabank Arena, although I do think ACC is a much better name. Like Air Canada Center is like, it's, they should just like call it Air Canada Center brought to you by Scotiabank, because Air Canada Center is such a sick name. I'm sorry. It just is.
Well, at the time in 2014, it was
the
Air Canada Center. Yeah.
They need to figure out a way. Trudeau, work on that. The other thing is, apparently Cops Coliseum is going to be renovated, and they're changing. I guess it's not called Cops Coliseum anymore. It's called like First Something Place. I'll look it up. But yeah, that stadium in Hamilton, they're renovating it, and it's going to be like an alternate venue for concerts. And other like smaller like hockey team will play there, like lower level team, maybe like women's league, whatever. And the interesting thing about that is that they're doing things to mitigate the sound echo and like to get actually decent sound out of an arena. So that will be really great once they open that up. The city needs it.
Because, all right, that does sound pretty interesting.
Yeah. And then finally, Nicki Minaj got arrested in Amsterdam because she...
Who?
Nicki Minaj.
Oh.
The famous rapper, yeah. She got arrested in Amsterdam for having... drugs on her. Now, let me know if you can hear this.
Oh, because you are carrying drugs.
I'm not carrying drugs.
Okay, but it's not a question.
No, I need a question. I'm not carrying drugs. Inside. Number one, when I came here, where am I going? Yeah. I have no idea where
you
I'm going.
You have to go to the police station.
What address is that?
It's 5 minutes away.
It's five minutes away.
What's the address of the police precinct?
When you will catch your next show, we have to do it very fast. And we will help, but...
You're talking about my show?
Yes.
What about it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she recorded herself being arrested. I don't know you could, like, get arrested for having weed in Amsterdam.
Yeah, the legalization of marijuana in Amsterdam is a little funky. It's not exactly legal in the most liberal term way it is here in Canada.
Yeah.
But it's weird because they have a lot of dispensaries, and I've been there twice, and I've had no issues smoking weed in public and in coffee shops there. So I don't know. I can't speak on the technicalities of it, but apparently it's not as legal as I was led to believe and many other people are led to believe.
Okay, yeah. So there you go. Certified drug user Ricardo P. says it lays down the law, so to speak, on using drugs in Amsterdam. Thank you. That is educational.
Damn.
So, any last words before I let you go?
Free Nicki Minaj. And hashtag enough is enough, fire Rick Leary.
Yeah, fire Rick Leary. Well, someone needs to take him on the news, like, and have him one-on-one and, like, just, like, have, like, just, he needs to sit down and be accountable to the people. There needs to be, like, a forum.
He does, but...
Like when Rob Ford talked to, like, Peter Mansbridge or something...
It'll never happen because he's always hiding in his little office in Davisville. Yeah. And the only interviews you get are Zoom interviews where it's lagging out and stuff. And as soon as any hard questions come up, he goes, oh, sorry, the connection seems to be off, and it starts lagging out.
Classic move. That's a classic move. Love doing that. Oh, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Sorry.
Can't hear you. Can't hear you. Yeah.
So that on that note, that's great. Okay, I'll talk to you soon because like apparently there's lots of like music news that I have to catch up on, and once I do, I'm gonna hit up my number one source for music
apology? Ricardo P.
Yeah. Musicology. I like it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Dick P.
Thank you. Good talking to you.